This is Joe Polizzi, co-author of Epic Content Marketing, Second Edition. Break through the clutter with a different story, get the most out of your content, and build a community in Web3. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today we welcome back Joe Polizzi to talk about the book he has co-authored with Brian Piper, Epic Content Marketing, Second Edition. Break through the clutter with a different story, get the most out of your content, and build a community in Web3, published by McGraw-Hill. Joe Polizzi is the founder of multiple startups, including content creator education site The Tilt, the content entrepreneur event Creator Economy Expo, CEX, and is the best-selling author of 7 books, including Content Inc. and Epic Content Marketing, which we're going to talk about, which was named a must-read business book by Fortune magazine. Joe is best known for his work in content marketing, first using the term in 2001, then launching Content Marketing Institute and Content Marketing World. Joe is often referred to as the godfather of content marketing. In 2014, he received the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Content Council. He successfully exited CMI in 2016 and consequently wrote an award-winning mystery novel, The Will to Die. He has 2 weekly podcasts, the Motivational Content Inc. podcast and the content news and analysis show This Old Marketing with Robert Rose. His foundation, The Orange Effect, delivers speech therapy and technology services to over 350 children in 35 states. And, interesting fact, Joe is now a member of a very exclusive club, the Marketing Book Podcast 6-Timers Club. Joe, congratulations on the second edition of Epic Content Marketing, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, it is an honor to be on this show with you. And as we were talking about before, I now have a new goal that I have to start churning out a few more books so that I can at least get on part of the 9-timer. Well, there's no 9-timer yet.
I want to
be the first 9-timer. And I have to set aside some more time to write so that I can be on your show 3 more times.
Oh, it would be my pleasure. And I'm happy there's this competitive streak in you. And I've read, I think it was in some either Fortune or Entrepreneur or something, an article you'd written about how important goals have been in your life.
If I look back on my career and what I was able to accomplish with the wonderful help of my family, especially my wife, I would probably put goal setting and then writing down those goals and then reviewing those goals when I wake up in the morning and before I retire at night. It's something about the visualization of that, the belief that you can actually do it, and the decisions you make during the day because you set those goals. And I wish more people would do that. I try to teach my kids to do that, which I don't think they're doing at this point. But I absolutely believe that if you write these things down and you start to make it part of your regular activities, these goals, they absolutely do happen. So you kind of set your own future that way.
I once heard that like only 4% of people write down their goals, and most people don't do it, as you talk about in the book, because they don't want to be held accountable. But actually, that's a very liberating thing. So, Joe, this is technically the 8th time you've been on the show, because I also interviewed you twice for Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. During the lockdown, you know, there were 66 episodes, and you were the only author I interviewed twice during Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. So clearly, you don't mind drinking with me.
No, the cocktails are an important part of my day-to-day. So, yeah, it's funny because in 24 hours from now, from this recording, I will be in London drinking at a pub.
Wow.
And I'm very much looking forward to that. Absolutely. Oh,
good, so, good. Yeah. Well, I just know that, you know, you're a big Tito's Vodka fan, and they sold a lot more vodka during the lockdown, in part because of you. And I, you know, when you're a marketing book podcast host, Joe Polizzi, you do a lot of research. And I went on their website and I saw that they don't offer tours because they're constantly adding on and building to their distillery. And I think, you know, they should call that the Polizzi wing. And then I spent about another hour on the website just printing out vodka recipes. So anyway, listen, as you wrote in the second edition of Content Inc., which was on the show a while back, when you sold Content Marketing Institute, you netted $17.9 million. But my sense is that because you're a frequent guest on the Marketing Book podcast, you still crave those Taco Bell discount coupons. Be honest, Joe. That's the real reason you wrote this second edition of Epic Content Marketing, is to get those Taco Bell discounts, right?
It's even more than that, Douglas. It's moved on to queso in general. There was a time a few months ago where every day during the week, my wife and I would hunt for Mexican restaurants to try the queso.
Uh-huh.
And Taco Bell is wonderful. And yeah. I'm all in on Taco Bell, especially when it's like 2 or 3 in the morning.
When you're coming back from the clubs. Yeah. Well, so, you know, anyway, if I know where you live, they're over at West 150th Street, which is 4 minutes away. They're going to be waiting for you with some fresh, you know, food.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
It's all about what really motivates us. And, you know, that works for you. That's great.
It's the little things.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, people, I feel bad for anyone listening to this. You're going to say, okay, Joe's a heavy drinker into vodka and can't get enough, you know, Taco Bell, soft taco supremes. So,
well, Joe, I don't think that's what's going to make people question your judgment. I think just being a guest on the show is what tends to, you know, ruin reputations and make people question you. But let's go back in time. Oh, gosh, maybe several years ago, I met you at the Inbound Conference in September 2014. I looked it up, and you were speaking there, and it was in Boston at the Convention Center, and I was messaging you on Twitter because I had to go to a different talk, and I was trying to catch you, and I went, you know, walked all the way to the other side, and just so you know what a geek and stalker I am, I flew to that conference with a hard copy of Epic Content Marketing in my suitcase because I knew you were going to be speaking there, and I was hoping to get your autograph, and I brought it in. I got a picture with you. And I remember that day you said they had just announced when the conference was going to be again in 2015. And it was the same week as Content Marketing World.
Yep.
They had just announced that, but hopefully everything turned out okay. So anyway, now I have the second edition of the book autographed by you and Brian. And one of the things that you did write was tell Mark Schaefer to stop writing because he has been on the podcast 8 times, and now you're number 6. So it's really, like I said, folks, Joe is a very competitive dude.
Yeah. This Mark Schaefer thing is actually getting out of hand, and I don't know if Mark listens to this, but it really doesn't matter. I'm out to get him.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely going to fly. I don't know when it's going to be, Douglas, but I'm going to fly past him with some, and I've got some strategies going on for how many books that we can churn out, but they've got to be valuable. You know, I can't just throw a book out there.
Yeah, but it'll be a time of your choosing.
That's right. So. And so when Mark least expects it, we are going to blow right by him. And I want to be there and I want to see his reaction when he boots up the episode.
Yeah,
of the Marketing Book Podcast, and sees that I'm on again, and I've one-upped him.
Yeah, and so. you mentioned him in your book. You at that point, you may not even mention him in your book. So, you know, Mark Schaefer, as you may know, for all those who follow trivia about this little corner of the marketing podcast world, he is the king of the Marketing Book Podcast. And David Merriman Scott is the patron saint of the Marketing Book Podcast. Longtime listeners will know that. And I am honored to announce today that Joe Polizzi is now the godfather of the Marketing Book Podcast. So, congratulations, Joe, and there will be extra coupons at that Taco Bell on West
150th. I'm so happy you don't lean into stereotypes.
That's well, you know, I read on your bio that said you're the godfather of content marketing, so.
I've leaned. You know what? When somebody introduced me, I can't remember what year that was. It was something like 2011, 2012. I was introduced at an event as the godfather of content marketing, and at first I'm like, that's not good. And then it started to catch on, and then I'm like, you know what? Let's just lean into it.
Yes.
And it's fine. If it works for people, wonderful.
Okay. So. Well, listen, Joe, I just want to cap this off about, you know, my history of stalking you. When I started this podcast back at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015, you were one of 11 authors. I made a video, I produced a video and pitched it to you, asking you to be one of the very first guests on the Marketing Book Podcast. And just for fun, I dug that video up yesterday and I watched it. I was just a child then. But you ended up being on episode 3 of the Marketing Book Podcast, and this will be episode 434.
Wow.
So that means that
congratulations.
My pleasure. And I love doing it. It's the fun thing I get to do. I get to talk to people like you and, you know, get around that restraining order that your wife had issued for me. So that means that every 431 episodes, I have penciled in an interview with Joe Pulizzi to talk about the next edition of Epic Content Marketing. So like I said, I do a lot of research. Mark your calendars, folks. July 18th, 2031. That'll be episode 862. Joe, let's go ahead and plan on it.
Oh, yeah. Let's put that in the calendar now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and by the way, we don't have to see each other in person. I remember that first time when I saw you in the back at Inbound Marketing. You're much taller than man than me, and I actually thought you were packing.
Yeah,
so I was a little bit concerned.
I would be concerned if I showed up and I was speaking. Seriously, but listen. One other thing I want to mention is that my wife Pam loves and adores Joe Pulizzi, and she's never even met you. And well, I'll tell you why. It's because you dedicate your books to my wife Pam. Like, in fact, on this one, you wrote, "To Pam, my best friend, with you, every day is better than the last. I love you."
And that is, yes, it's for all the Pams of the world.
Oh.
That's why.
Oh, man, I'm glad my wife doesn't listen to this.
There's a Pam fan club out there, and I'm the president.
So. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, good.
So she's a smart woman. There you go.
Now it's getting complicated because my wife said, I'd like to meet him. But anyway, so the last thing I want to mention is when the book came out on sales, you had several copies of the book to people, along with two people were posting pictures that they'd gotten the book and two cookies, and the cookies looked just like the cover of the book. And I received a box, and it had a book, and it had one cookie in it. And I'm not very good at picking up on signals, which my wife will affirm, but I took that as a signal that I need to stay hungry. And by that, it was a signal probably from your wife, Pam, that this had better be a good interview or there will be no more cookies in the future and no more interviews. So,
is that true? You only got one cookie?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like,
oh,
you know what?
Oh, my gosh.
I appreciate the
That's
feedback.
Probably the box that I put together, actually.
Okay.
So now it's all making – by the way, I know there's a lot of authors that listen to your show, of course. Putting cookies with your book launch as part of your book launch strategy is a very smart move.
Oh, really?
It was one of the best launches we've ever done. And I think large in part because, you know, the content's the content. We'll talk about it. Content marketing,
right now.
Blah, blah, blah. But it's the cookies that people really want.
Yes. So. Yes. So it occurred to me that I could get a sheet cake made at Costco that looks just like the cover and have like a Joe Pulizzi party. And you don't even need to be here. We'd have the sheet cake and Tito's. So, you know, I think it's going to catch on. So listen, on to the book. Enough of this nonsense that you're putting up with. At epiccontentmarketing.com, there are great resources, and I'm going to include a link to that on this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And as Stephen Covey would have said, let's begin with the end in mind, because the end of the book is really, really interesting, where you have quotes from several thought leaders, a few of which I've had the honor of interviewing, who give their predictions on the future of content marketing. It's really, really interesting. And it's also a chapter on examples for inspiration, and it includes the top 25 content marketing questions answered in 140 characters or less. Very fun. But wait, there's more. There are a few pages of the content marketing commandments. And finally, there's a list of 43 things you can do to get your epic content marketing rolling. So, Joe, please, before we talk about the book, tell us what is different and new in this second edition.
You know, it's interesting. Thank you, Douglas. Thank you for everything. I super appreciate being on. I honestly, when Brian Piper approached me in 21 about the possibility of doing this, I thought, oh, yeah, great. We can just update it. There's, you know, Google Plus and SlideShare were big parts of the last one. We've got to update all the tech, whatever. This will be a cinch. Then we started to go through the content and realize, oh, a lot has changed in a decade. we really need to update. A decade in marketing is what, like 100 years. It's so much has changed. And the content marketing framework, the strategic approach that we talked about in the first epic content marketing, it's there. It's the same. You know, we talk about the idea of focus. Who's the audience? What's their pain points? What's that area of content that you feel you need to be the leading expert in the world at? Those are all the same things. And then we talk about the process and how to get that information out. But the new stuff we had to put in, the power of building a community, the idea of how do we use artificial intelligence? Of course, that's a big issue right now going on in our content marketing strategy and our process. What about Web3 and the metaverse? Should we look at this? Is this an opportunity for us? And so I would say the first 40% of the book, we updated. Absolutely. We've got the new quotes. We've got the updated case studies. Really, really important. Case studies. Oh my God. I mean, when I first wrote this in 2013, it was very difficult to find case studies. This time, you know, if you look at the way we unpacked the Cleveland Clinic case study and mm-hmm. the Arrow Electronics case study, so important to have these today that enterprises can look at. But the back half of the book is basically all new. And thankfully, Brian took, I told Brian, I said, hey, if you're going to do this, I'm going to saddle you with all the work on the back half of this book. And he was very happy to take that on.
Yes.
It was wonderful to work with Brian on it.
There are certain fundamentals that aren't going to change now or in 50 years. There'll be new case studies and there'll be new news, but I was happy to see, you know, sort of an affirmation to see that certain things just aren't going to change. So let me, what you say here in the beginning is the content marketing landscape has changed dramatically in the past 10 years since I wrote the first edition of Epic Content Marketing. There are new channels, opportunities, technologies, tools, and techniques for both content entrepreneurs and businesses creating content. With all these changes, it still comes down to creating epic content, and we want to help you learn to do that. So, Joe Polizzi, as you know or may have figured out, I am the king of stupid questions because, like Forrest Gump,
I'm not a smart man.
So, Joe Polizzi, we got to get one big question out of the way. What is content marketing?
I'm glad you asked that. I've answered that question many times in the past 20
It's also the title years. Of chapter one.
Yes, exactly. So content marketing, by the way, is important to say it's not a new thing. I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years. We've sort of updated it and started calling it content marketing around 2007, 8, 9, if you will. But it's the idea that we as an organization can create valuable, compelling, and relevant information to a very targeted audience over a hopefully long period of time consistently in order to do what? We're talking about marketing, so we need to maintain or change some kind of a behavior. And maybe we should lead with that, Douglas, and say,
yeah,
this is marketing, so we need to maintain or change a behavior. And that's this content marketing is what differentiates just content creation or content production as a hobby or my mom who's on Facebook creating content. You know, what are we doing with content marketing? We actually have to see the needle move with our business in some way. We're not just doing it because, oh, we want to do it out of the kindness of our heart. That's a big deal. We want that to happen. We want to positively affect our customers, our audience. We want them to know, like, and trust us. But we believe if we do that and they know, like, and trust us, they will actually be apt to buy from us or buy more from us or stay longer as a customer in some way. So that is the premise of content marketing. And I believe that if we all just started marketing tomorrow for the first time, content marketing would be the way we would do it. We wouldn't just throw out signs and say, hey, buy our product here. I'm available. I'm open. Throw it to me. I don't think we would do that. I think we would say, okay, well, who are we targeting? What are their pain points? What keeps them up at night? How do I create a relationship with them, build an amazing content experience in some way? And then once I have a relationship, I can let them know about the things that we sell. I think that's just the purest way that you can sell today. And still, as you know, and why we have a second edition of this book, most companies are really horrible at it. And a lot of that's because change is hard. Companies that have been around longer than 10 years, content marketing is a very difficult thing for them to swallow because they have to change a lot of their sales and marketing processes.
Change is terrifying. Yes, you say they call this content marketing, but at the end, it's with the objective of driving profitable customer action. And there was a very interesting quote on page X of the intro, to sell more, we need to be marketing our products and services less. I thought that was very, very interesting. But jumping ahead, this surprised me on page 6 where you write, these days people are much more familiar with the term content marketing. Okay. But yes. Many people still confuse content marketing with social media marketing. Can you briefly explain the confusion and help clear things up?
So content marketing, if you believe in the philosophy, requires some kind of a strategy and strategic approach when you're saying, I'm going to target a specific audience and I'm going to deliver something consistently. So think about, what are you doing? What's the thing? Is it a podcast? Is it a newsletter? Is it a blog? Is it a YouTube series? Is it a TikTok? What is it? We're not just putting it out there in the social channels, hoping that somebody's going to share it and it's going to go viral. We actually have a strategic approach with our audience that we want them to opt into our communications, want to receive them over and over and over again, just like a media company would. And I think when a lot of people start with social media, they start with the channel in mind. Oh, I'm going to produce this on Facebook. I'm going to do this on TikTok, on YouTube. And that's actually much later in the process because content marketing starts with, who is the audience?
Yes.
What are their pain points? What keeps them up at night? And then down the line, we figure, okay, well, what are the things that we can talk about? What are the stories that we can tell? And what can we do on a regular basis that will make an impact on our lives? And then we might say, well, how do we do that?
Yes.
And I think the problem is most companies start with, oh, we got to be on TikTok.
Check the box. Yeah.
Yeah. Check the box. Yeah. And I would say, no, you don't need to be. You might not need to be on TikTok. You might not need to be on Instagram. Who knows?
Quite often that's brought on by this concept called Management by In-Flight magazine, where the CEO comes in and throws the magazine down on the table and points at the marketer and says, TikTok, put it all in TikTok. Yeah. So
it's exactly right. And that's still, unfortunately happening. Or they say, oh, this so-and-so company, you know, they saw this viral video or look what they did on YouTube or whatever. And that's actually, you want to know how the majority of SEO programs started? It's because somebody typed in something into Google and realized they weren't being found and their competitor was. And and lo and behold, now we've got an SEO program.
So. Yes. Well, now listen, for those that may be thinking, I don't know, I'm not sure. Those maybe the companies that have been around more than 10 years. We got to get one thing out of the way.
Don't be hating.
On 23, you write, don't get me wrong. I'm not a traditional marketing hater. Explain.
Content marketing is part of your options. And your, as you would probably call it, your arsenal going out there and how you want to communicate with your customers.
Yeah.
Advertising in a lot of cases still works.
Yes.
Traditional PR in a lot of cases still works. I don't have any problem with that at all. And honestly, if you get, let's say you listen to this and you get the content marketing bug and you're like, oh, I like what Joe's saying and I want to do content marketing. If you don't have you might say, Joe, what should I expect in 6 to 9 months? I would say you should expect nothing. When it comes to content marketing, it takes a long time to build a loyal audience. You need to put out this program 12 and 18 months and 24 months. So let's say that you really need to drive product sales immediately. My God, don't do content marketing. Mm-hmm. That's not going to do it. You need to do something completely different. Yes. You need some kind of lead magnet. You need to buy advertising and sponsorship. I mean, you might have some influencer programs. You're not talking about content marketing. Content marketing is a long-term approach to build amazing relationships with a sector of your customers that you're going after. That's what content marketing is for. So all the other stuff, I believe, I mean, if you talk to Robert Rose, he'll say content marketing is like butter. It makes everything you're doing as part of your marketing better.
Yes.
So that's what I would think about it as.
Yeah. And I would say those that need to make more sales right away, one of the first things you should do is, are you selling as much and helping your current customers as much as you possibly can? You probably have a list of customers, email addresses. Start with them. So,
by the way, that's where I would start with a content marketing approach, by the way. I think the temptation is, oh, I want to do this at the top of the funnel and I want to get new customers. That's way more difficult than saying, hey, who are our current customers and how can we help them? Mm-hmm. How can we talk to them on a regular basis? And I don't have to just be pitching my product all the time. I can actually send them things that are going to help them live a better life or get a better job. Do that. That's why content marketing comes out of the custom publishing field where it was custom magazines. And they were loyalty-driven magazines for the most part. And now we're doing all the things, but I would start there with current customers.
Great. Well, we've got that out of the way. I want to jump to, I think it's chapter 6, which Brian Piper wrote. And I love how you all indicate who wrote the chapter.
Very important.
Yeah. So, but this is one that he wrote, and it's page 63, and he wrote about the six principles of epic content marketing. I think it would be helpful for folks to hear about. But before we talk about those six principles, just before that, let's talk about why a company's current content may not be working for the business. What are some of the reasons that you see a lot of that make you feel like you're taking crazy pills?
Well, the biggest issue is when you let's say you do a cursory content audit, Douglas, and you say, okay, what kind of content are we creating? Most of it's product and service related. Most of it's about the company or it's about the company's products or services. And here's what you have to realize is that for the most part, only in very certain times of the buyer's journey, your customers don't. They don't care. They don't care about your stuff.
Yes.
They care about themselves. They care about their own needs. So that's where if you're talking, most of your content or your content program is stuff that you're doing, you got a big, big problem when it comes around that. The second thing is you're probably a little bit afraid of experimentation. You've got to set yourself up so that you can actually go out there and say, yes, we are going to be authentic. We are going to go out and tell stories. We're going to be a little bit audacious and say we want to be the leading expert in this thing. And a lot of companies, honestly, are afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at that as well. The other thing, I mean, this kind of wraps a lot of what Brian was saying in this chapter, but if you look at what most companies are doing out there when it comes to content creation, just take Content Marketing Institute statistics. I would say most companies create content 13 to 16 different ways. That's according to their stats. So they're doing Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and webinars and blogs and podcasts. They're doing all the things, right? The problem is when you do all the things, you're mediocre at best and you can't be great at any one thing. And so when we go in and we look at, what is this enterprise doing? They're doing a lot of content creation that's having absolutely no impact. So when we go in and I make a recommendation, I don't usually make a recommendation on you got to do these things. I mostly say you have to start killing some things so that you can be great at one or two things and really make a positive impact on your customers. And so that's a big thing. And then the last thing is they stop. I mean, most organizations look at content marketing as a campaign around a product or service or an initiative. And content marketing campaign, that's not a thing, Douglas. A content marketing campaign means at some point, it stops. So,
yes.
Not to say we don't want campaigns like political campaigns. We absolutely want those to stop. But content marketing campaigns, we don't want them to stop because we are making a promise to our customers to deliver something amazing over a long period of time. And if you build their trust and then stop, what have you done? You've just wasted that whole initiative. So you don't want to stop.
Yeah. And I would think not serving a niche and not having CEO buy-in are probably two that I've seen have a big problem there. They're trying to be all things to all people. But let's jump ahead. What are some of the principles of epic content marketing?
Well, first of all, you have to fill some kind of a need. And we would call that you have to identify your content tilt. What's your area of differentiation that you can actually break through all the content clutter and build an audience? Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go into, let's say, a field like cloud computing, well, that's a very, very busy area of content. Who are you going to target? Oh, we're going to target engineers. Wow, that's very broad. How can you be the leading expert in content and cloud computing to engineers when Amazon and IBM and Salesforce are all doing the same things? So you really want to make sure you're filling a real need. The second thing is consistency. Like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to do the blog, you're going to do the podcast, the YouTube series, you want to, what Andrew Davis would say, be like must-see TV. You want to set an appointment with your audience. Is it every Friday at 8 a.m.? Is it Wednesday? Is it every Tuesday and Friday? Is it once a month? Whatever it is, you want to create the minimum amount of content for the maximum amount of impact, but you want to do so in a consistent way. You need to have some kind of point of view. Like, are you just going to put out content there,
or do
you
have a robot
on this? Yeah. You have, that's why it's great. All this ChatGPT stuff is wonderful, but they're not necessarily going to give you a point of view on how you're going to look at things, look at that content niche to that particular audience in a different way. Keep the sales speak out of it. Absolutely have to. If you can sell, you absolutely can sell at certain points, but your content that you're trying to integrate into your program should not be salesy at all.
Yes.
This is just like a media company would. Look at what the New York Times is. Look at what Financial Times. Look at Huffington Post. Look at BuzzFeed. However you look at that content, the content is the content and the sales are separate. They're outside of that. And you need to do the same thing, because as soon as you start inserting your sales stuff and buy this widget, you're going to lose them. So I would look at that. And I guess the last thing, Douglas, and this is where a lot of people maybe don't agree with me, and You might think it's audacious, but I would say that if you're going to do this thing, you're going to target a particular audience around a particular content niche, you have to set the goal that you want to be the best. You have to say, I want to be the leading informational expert in that content area to that particular group of people. And if you don't do that or want to do that, what are you doing? You just want to create content just like everybody else's?
Yeah.
You actually want to be differentiated. So set the goal with your team that you want to build the audience for this thing and become the expert for this thing. And if you do it right and you do all these things in 12 to 18 months, you absolutely can be.
Yeah. Just to have that conversation of we want to be the best and then have people around the table say, okay, well, now that's not necessarily going to be the best. What else can we do what can we do differently to still be the best? So that's great. I want to jump ahead and play the audio from a Michael Jordan commercial that you are very fond of, where he talks about the many failures in his life. And I want you to explain why it's one of your favorite commercials and what it has to do with content marketing.
I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed.
I got goosebumps just from listening to that.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's in that. I mean, you could talk about taking the experiment of doing this thing, being audacious enough to say, like, we want to be the leading expert. But I think that the real thing that opens up to it is if you don't go forward and say, I'm going to push the envelope, I'm going to set the goal, I'm going to come back to you with this information that's going to change your life in some positive way, what are we doing this thing for? I think that we sometimes get so wrapped up into we've got to sell the thing that if you look and go back to what a Michael Jordan thing is, it's like, boy, he set the goal of being the best. He did 6 championships. He was MVP all those times. It's a lot easier for an athlete to say, what's that shining thing on the hill that you want to reach for? Well, we have to set the same kind of goals in life and in marketing to do that. So I think it's a great reminder to go forward and say, look, if you're not going to be best of breed, why are you doing this in the first place? And then you have to ask yourself that question. Okay, what does that mean to be best of breed? If you set your content mission or your editorial goal, and then you look at it and your team looks at it and they say, we, to your point before, we really can't be the leader in that area. Then you have to get more niche.
Yes.
You have to even get to say, okay, well, let's go down a little. Let's go more niche in content. Let's go more niche with the audience and get to a point where maybe the competitive set is 3 or 5 or 10 and say, if we do the work, if we deliver consistently like Michael Jordan does, time in and time out, we can absolutely build this audience. And once you build an audience that knows, likes, and trusts you, it's a game changer for your entire organization. Don't ask me. Look at Red Bull Media House. Red Bull Media House is probably just as valuable as Red Bull is. Look at Lego. Why has Lego been able to continue to be one of these amazing brands through all these decades going on? Well, you know, I was receiving Lego magazine, then called Brick Kicks magazine, in 1987. Still around today. They're still shooting and scoring if it was Michael Jordan.
They're behaving like media companies that happen to sell something on the side.
That's exactly right. And that's where it's interesting to see. I mean, if you look at the culmination of where we think content marketing is going to go, the business model from a marketing standpoint between what the New York Times does and what Lego does is the same. We look at it and we perceive it differently, but it is absolutely the same. And I think that if you're a marketing leader or you're a marketing project coordinator or you're just getting into content creation, now is the time to understand that those things are the same. And it really is about attention and how do we build positive attention and ultimately can sell whatever we want because our customers and our audience absolutely loves us and trusts us.
Yes. And I think there's a lot more fear out there in the business world than people admit or maybe realize or acknowledge. And it seems like a marketing person could play that commercial from Michael Jordan and basically say, are we afraid of failing? Because that might tell them right off the bat, you know what, this isn't going to work. Got to understand there's going to be some failure. It's not going to be perfect.
Oh, and that's the thing. And that when you get started, it won't be. I mean, if I look back, I started blogging in April of 2007, and I look back on those blogs that are still around, and I tense up, and I'm like, did I really write that? It's terrible.
Right.
Because it takes a few. What is your story? How are you going to best tell that story? You got to work out all those bugs. Sometimes you have to find what your tilt is in your audience, and you've got to put in the time and energy. I mean, you mentioned before about writing a novel, and it's the first time I wrote fiction. It took me 4 weeks of getting up every day and writing really horrible content before I got into the flow and felt like I was actually creating something meaningful. So
yes.
This is a new muscle for organizations, and you've got to get out there and actually put yourself out there, be afraid to fail, and you'll learn quicker than you probably think, but you actually have to do it. You have to take the step.
Well said. And this podcast, like many others, has episode 000, and it's one that I can update over the years. And it just says, like, it's like an about page for a website, but it's like, this is what the podcast is all about. It's very short. But one of the things I say on there when I've updated it over the years is to say, I hear from a lot of listeners who start binge listening to all the episodes, and I say, please start with the newest episodes and then work your way back to episode one, because I seriously hope I've gotten a little bit better than what I can currently hear on episode one. Although, you know, it was David Merriman Scott. So there you go. Well, let's jump quickly to another concept that, you know, may speak to the CFOs, and that's about assets. You write, according to Investopedia, an asset is a resource with economic value that a corporation owns or controls with the expectation that it will provide future benefit. An asset, like a house or a stock investment, is a purchase that can increase in value over time. So the question is, do most marketing professionals view content marketing as an asset?
I think that most professionals in the position you're talking about look at marketing as an expense line.
Yeah.
And even if you look at advertising, right? I mean, if you advertise somewhere, you've got to make sure, I'm putting the ad up and I want to make sure that I get something out of that ad as quickly as possible, even though you could argue with me on that. But that's how a lot of people see it. But content marketing is different. I mean, if you think about it, what media companies build assets. You build an email marketing database. You build a first party addressable data. You build a content brand that has value to a lot of people. You're creating things that if they so choose, they could sell off and people will pay money for. That is an asset. That marketing is not used to doing that, but that is actually what we're seeing. And if you look at it, we have a really great, amazing case study on Arrow Electronics in the book, and they've got 52 or 53 content brands and 3 million plus engineers that are opted in to receive those. And if they ended up selling those off, first of all, every one of those brands are profitable in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And you remember talking about the book Killing Marketing that Robert Rose and I wrote in 2017. That was all about marketing being a profit center. This is what's happening when you take a content marketing approach. You build something that not only is an asset for the organization, but can throw off cash. And I think if we think about the model of we are a marketing organization, but we are also a media entity, we can monetize this in 6, 7, 8, 10 different ways. Some of those ways are, I can sell advertising and sponsorships. I can do an event like Salesforce or like HubSpot in, you know, inbound marketing where you and I met. You could do premium content and sell a book. You could then sell products, or you could sell, hey, I want to increase yield and have people buy more for what they were doing before. All those things are in play now and they weren't before. And I want to talk to the CFOs and the CMOs of the world and say, just don't get so close. Just take a step back. Look at your marketing a little bit differently and take the long game approach and say, this is not all instantaneous. This is not just for the quarterly report. We can do something really, really amazing with our brand and with our business if we take the long-term approach that we're building something that we can actually do something with long-term, and we don't have to start over and over and over again like generally most marketing does.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, Joe, let's transition. Things are about to get heated and controversial here.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Page 130. This probably got me more fired up, and fired up in a good way, in violent agreement with you all. I want to read this and ask you to talk about that. The subtitle is Reality Bites.
After years of consulting and working with businesses asking for content help, from strategy to blog posts, visual content, content distribution, integration, hiring, research, and everything else under the sun, here's what we've learned. There is good help out there, but it's hard to tell the partners from the posers. So, Joe, talk to us about what are some of the truths about content marketing agencies and how smart brands should view the outsourced marketing services providers these days.
You know, it's funny you ask this question, because right before this conversation that you and I are having, I met with an agency, wonderful agency. They're doing some amazing things, and they also provide content marketing services. But the problem is they don't do any of their own content marketing. They don't have anything going out to their current customer base, and they're not, as they would say, eating their own dog food. And when somebody comes to me and they say, Joe, we're doing this content marketing initiative. We want to leverage an agency. We've got it narrowed down to three agencies. They say, I don't know which one to choose. Which one should I choose? And my first answer is always, which one is employing their own content marketing efforts? And what you'll find is the majority of content marketing agencies and marketing agencies in general, they don't do it. They don't have their own magazine or their own podcast to their customers or newsletter or anything. So that's a really good way to look at it. The same thing for SEO agencies. And I get it. It's Shoemaker Shoes. You and I have had this conversation before. But this is really important, because if they really, really believe in it, they should be doing it.
Yes.
And if they're not doing it, I absolutely wouldn't use them. You can go somewhere else. So that's a really good way to check the box against somebody. Say, I don't want to partner with that company because they're not doing their own content marketing.
Right. But let's go back to the SEO, because that's an industry that's changing. And the way you all write it, it's as if they're realizing, oh, there's less and less for us to do, or there are more companies that realize that, you know, SEO has gone from plastic surgery to internal medicine. It's got to be baked into everything you do. And so they're like, oh, quick, well, what can we do instead? Oh, content marketing. Yeah, tell them we do content marketing, right?
Well, look at any – and again, I've got nothing against any of these agencies. Some of them are doing a very, very good job. But just in general, look at any SEO agency website. Look at any PR agency website. Look at any straight marketing. They all have a drop down for content marketing services. Everybody just said, oh, we got to get in the content marketing game. Yeah. And here's the problem is they will focus completely on execution, because that's where they make their money. They're like, oh, we want to do the thing. We'll help you write all the blog content. We'll help you put on the podcast. We'll help you execute all. Well, that's great. But is that the answer? Because what you want is you want an agency to challenge you, because maybe you shouldn't be doing a podcast. Maybe you shouldn't be doing a YouTube series. Maybe you should be doing something else. Maybe you shouldn't be doing anything at all. So what I want this agency to come forward with is, what's the strategy? What's the strategic approach that makes sense with what you're doing? What's the big picture? And unfortunately, because this focus is so much on execution and they're trying to pick up some of these dimes, it's very frustrating that we've seen this for many, many years. I think it's getting worse. I don't think it's getting any better, because every company can do this, wants to do this now. So it's like, oh, well, we can do it for you.
Yeah. Everybody was a social media expert a few years ago. Yeah, we can show you how to do that. You're right. Most agencies are less concerned about strategy than they are about execution. Want to hear a dirty little secret that content agencies subscribe to? Give away the strategy to get the execution. Oh, my goodness. I've seen that so much over the years. And you talk in B2B marketing, well, I guess in so many places, the problem is that buying has become so difficult. I think buying outsourced content is just as difficult.
It's tough today. I mean, you can't do the, oh, we're going to buy 1,000 articles anymore. Not that that ever worked in the first place, but you want to have some kind of point of view. I mean, if you're going to have an agency work with you on your storytelling, they have to really have a good understanding of what your mission is and who your audience is. So that's where I would say, if you're going to hire somebody on the outside, make sure they really understand your industry and your audience first and foremost.
Yes. And in the book, you talk about how you really need to have a content person inside. Whether that's the owner of the business or, you know, a content person, but if you are outsourcing, you still have to have, you argue very persuasively for the fact that you need to have an internal content person.
Yes. Well,
Joe, because this has gotten me so excited, and I'll calm down here. But I don't normally do this, but I hope it's okay with you. I want to quote a little bit from another book from a friend of yours, friend of mine, Marcus Sheridan, They Ask, You Answer. And at the very end of his second edition, he writes on chapter 65, can I just hire an agency to do this for me? And he writes, I've been asked many, many times by audience members and readers whether they can simply hire an agency to do all this content and digital stuff suggested in They Ask, You Answer. Truthfully, I could take the easy route and tell you, yeah, of course an agency could do this for you just as well as you could do it for yourself. Heck, I own an agency. We do this stuff for clients. But the fact is that if I said that, I'd be lying. The world of inbound and content marketing has proven this time and time again. Case in point, my agency, Impact, provided traditional inbound marketing services to clients like every other agency in the space for years, and the results, incredibly average. Sure, mm-hmm. We were able to build nice websites, helps clients rank for some new keywords and build better marketing campaigns, but it wasn't until we decided to offer a consulting model where we taught other companies the how of inbound content and They Ask, You Answer that we started to see world-class case studies and to empower our clients to shoot to the top of their industries. So anyway, it's just really got me fired up, and I would urge more companies to study up on this because you can do more of it than you think you can.
First of all, I love that. Second thing I would say is if you're an agency out there, I would go to the client and say, my job is to help you tell better stories and set up a process for doing so, and build an audience so that you won't need me at some point. Mm-hmm. That's really what an agency should do. So Marcus is absolutely right. Why do we outsource things? We outsource things because they're not core competencies. So you're going to outsource the thing that you stand for. So content marketing is supposed to be the thing that you stand for most. These are the things that you believe. This is your point of view on the industry. You're giving away your intelligence and your insight. You're going to outsource that? How important is that to you?
Right, right. It's like outsourcing your R&D. Or right. Or your engineering. Oh my goodness.
I know. We could go all day.
I know.
But it's so critical. And you'll get to that. I mean, when people are starting, that's where they go. Hey, we don't have the resources, we want to do that. But yes, you want to have at least somebody inside your organization that is your content champion and working with the outsource providers on a production standpoint.
Well,
at least
somebody. And I have seen nothing work as well as when a company adopts a culture of creating their own content, basically, and as Marcus talks about in his book, answering customer questions. So let's jump to another thing that just tickled my fancy on page 159. This is one Brian wrote also. He writes, how many times have you heard the following that stopped you in your tracks? I think all the marketers are going to be have heard this. Our CEO or executive or engineer doesn't create content. In fact, no one in our organization creates content. And then he writes, this one is almost certainly not true. Or our CEO, executive, or engineer can't write. Okay, maybe this one's true. And finally, how are we going to get all this content created? Oh, I've heard that 100 times. I just don't have the resources or correct process. And he writes, this one is almost always true to an extent. Then he writes, now, before exploring some of the following ideas, you need to realize that almost no company has a shortage of raw materials for content marketing. I have found that most companies have more content than they realize. Please elaborate.
So if you are listening to this, I think you have to realize that you are already creating more content in your organization than anything you do. And you have to think about this. Now, you won't know this is true. You might say, Joe, you're full of it. Well, what do you do? Well, do just a cursory content audit. Just start looking at all the things you're doing in your organization. You've got lots of blog posts and website articles that are being created. You've got somebody working on a podcast. You've got some webinars going on. You've got all kinds of PowerPoint presentations. You've got content run amok. You just don't have any process around it to harness it. So that's where I would look. And first of all, you need to do the content audit and actually figure out what you're doing. Because if you don't know what you're doing right now, how can you move forward?
And they should add their resources page that I'm going to link to has a document you can use for a content audit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you don't have to pay a lot of money. And you can go and work with an agency to do this, but you don't have to. This is a very simple thing mm-hmm. that you could do. So figure out where you're at. Really terrible quick story is Robert Rose and I worked with a company and they did a whole research project and they spent a lot of money for it and they were about to release it. And right before they released it, they realized that a whole nother section of the company had already done that research but they didn't know.
No.
They just didn't know it was already being done. So that's why you need to start talking to each other. And if you have people that are in charge of content in different groups of the company, they need to start talking to each other. Maybe use some of the Zoom technology so they could talk to each other and get on the same page with what's going on from a content standpoint. So the point is, you have a lot of content that's already happened. Maybe you're just not all have it pointed at the same direction. And maybe some of that stuff shouldn't be done so that you can kill some of those things and focus on being exceptional at one or two things. And that's where I think that it's just all over the place right now. So let's be strategic about it. Let's say no to a lot of the things that we're doing already so we can say a big fat yes to focusing on this podcast to this group of people or this event to this group of people and really start making change happen. That's how I would look at it.
Yes. Oh, such great advice. In the remaining time we have, there's one big thing I want to ask you about, and that's about measuring the impact of your content marketing. As you know, all marketers, that's often the top thing, trying to prove the ROI. And I want to quote, I believe, this is also from Brian. you should have brought him on.
You see a trend here? Brian did a lot of the editing and writing of the second edition.
Yes, absolutely. And if I were a better interviewer, I could interview two people at once. But let me just quote from page 210 here for the listener. Please, this is under the subheading, what the C-level wants to know about content marketing. Okay, is everybody ready?
Here you go.
Please don't show an analytics report to your senior executive in charge. Your senior executive in charge only cares about four things when it comes to your content marketing measurement and return on investment. Is the content driving sales for us? Is the content saving costs for us? Is the content making our customers happier, thus helping with retention? Is the content growing our community and expanding our opportunities? Now, in the section at the end of the book, the top 25 content marketing questions answered in 140 characters or less that I mentioned earlier, number 16 is, how do I measure ROI? And the answer is, you don't. What? It says, figure out what the specific content marketing objective is and then measure your return on objective. So can you explain what is meant by return on objective?
We started using return. Boy, I had that, I think, back with Get Content, Get Customers days when New Parrot and I started to talk about it, because we'd go in for the ROI conversation and it would get cloudy real quick and we would get a lot of non-believers. I said, okay, let's just simplify this.
Every listener could probably identify with that.
Yeah, exactly, right? Let's just look at all we're trying to do something. Again, back to this whole marketing thing. We're trying to maintain or change behavior, create some profitable action. What is that action? What do you want to see happen? Are you trying to drive more sales? Are you trying to keep your customers longer? Are you trying to create better yield? So you want to write down a hypothesis. That's part of your objective. So you want to start with, I'm trying to talk to this group of people. I'm going to ultimately send this type of thing. And I want to see this type of outcome. That's it. That's all. And that's what we measure for. And the thing is, the reason why some of this takes so long is the data takes a long time. There's a really good example from TD Ameritrade. They did a magazine called Think Money Magazine, and it was sent out to traders. And their goal was to get those traders to trade more often. They put all the data together. They couldn't get enough data in 9 to 12 months to make it work. After 2 years, they found out that when they sent the magazine, Think Money Magazine, to these traders, those that read the magazine and subscribed to the magazine traded five times more than those that didn't.
Right. That's like in the book where you talk about the importance of understanding subscribers versus non-subscribers.
That's right. Exactly. Right. But it's very simple. It's just, what was the objective? Our objective is to take our current customers and have them use more of our product. Great. How are we going to do that? And then you go through and say, oh, we're going to do a magazine. We'll send that magazine out monthly. And don't overcomplicate it. And that's why some of this is, sometimes it's easier to just do a pilot program. Keep it separate from marketing until it gets its legs going on, until you get enough qualitative feedback that says this thing is working and you can move forward. So it's just return on objective is something, just to not make it complicated and just say, oh yeah, this is what we're trying to do. Here's what we're trying to talk to. Here's what we're going to send. We're going to do it on a regular basis. And here's how we're going to measure it. Done. Mm-hmm.
Is that okay, boss? No? Okay, then we won't do it. But also, that is such great advice to do a pilot, because it's almost like, where Amazon, they test everything. And they say, well, did it succeed or did we learn something? That's okay. They do lots of tests. That's why pilot programs, I think, are underused by marketers when they want to get permission to do something new. Just say, well, we're going to test this.
It's so true, Douglas. It's so true because when you get the content marketing and you become the champion, you get very excited about this and you want to put the flag in the ground and say, we're going to change this organization. We're going to be focused on our audience's needs. And then you want to do a big thing that almost always fails. Because change is so hard. Just keep it quiet. Do a little project over to the side. You know, a great one, we have got a whole case study on Cleveland Clinic, which is one of the greatest content marketing case studies on the planet. They started as a little itty-bitty blog back in 2009. Right. I was in that meeting. I remember the whole thing and how they started. They kept it so small. Now they've got over 100 people working on this thing. And it is throwing off money and is driving new patients into Cleveland Clinic hospitals. But it started as just a small blog, and it was just a test project.
Yeah.
Just start there.
Frame it that way, folks. Yeah. Well, let me just put a pin in this. On page 217, he writes, too often content marketers tell themselves that they can't accurately measure their results, that a tactic isn't measurable, or that they don't feel comfortable measuring content. These statements hang over your content marketing like a dark cloud. If you find yourself falling into this camp, don't worry. You still have time to get on the right track. And folks, I'm here to tell you, chapter 20 will get you pointed in the right direction. So Joe, I just wanted to mention one real quick thing that Joe Chernoff contributed, where he talks about the four hidden benefits of content marketing. And one of them, I think, is almost a bigger issue for companies these days than marketing, and it is that content can give you a recruiting edge. Can you talk just for a minute about that?
Well, I mean, if you want to hire the best people on the planet, what are those people going to do before they say yes to your job offer? They're going to look you up. Yeah. What are you doing? What kind of content's out there?
Yeah.
Are you doing some cool things?
What's it like to work there? What can you do for me?
Yeah. Are you being innovative? Are you leading the conversation in your industry? I mean, are you? I mean, really answer the question there. So it can give you a recruiting edge. Those people might make the decision for you versus somebody else because you're actually findable in Google or you've got some amazing videos on YouTube or whatever the case is. I mean, and we talked about internal communications as well. If you are communicating internally to your customers and to your employees and you have happy employees, those employees bring in a lot of new employees, right? They're your best recruiters out there.
Yes,
are the employees.
Just like so your best customers are your best marketers.
Exactly. I mean, I told somebody this the other day. If you're going to start a content marketing initiative, the first one you need to do is with your employees.
Yes.
It's the most important. Your most important customers are your employees. So start there and focus on what's that goal? Oh, we want to keep our employees longer. We want them to stay longer. We want them to talk more favorably about the company. We can measure all these things. We can measure what they say on social. We can start to help them create their own social followings so that they can better market our company. Lots of great things happen.
Yes,
so you have to think about internal first, I believe.
Yes, and I can't remember where it was in the book, but you all talk about how in marketing, the most important audience is always your internal audience.
Always. And this is, I'm an acolyte of Don Schultz, father of integrated marketing communications. Mm-hmm. And he always said, your first step in marketing is internal. Always. Yeah. Don't go and market externally until you've got your internal marketing righted.
So I
would just recommend that.
So true. So Joe, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I would say less is more. Focus on one area to do one thing for a group of customers instead of trying to boil the ocean. And it's probably the biggest thing that I find, Douglas, is I'll go in and I'll look at what they're doing now. And they're doing so many things. And it's so hard in marketing right now because you feel you have to do all the things. And, you know, I'm going to give everyone permission. You don't have to do all the things. Only be in the places that make sense for your business and you can make a positive impact on your audience. That's it. Only do that. So if you're doing the email newsletter and it's a waste of time and it's not making an impact on your customers, stop it. If it's the same with the podcast, stop. If you're dabbling with YouTube and you're not learning anything and it's just a waste of time, stop that too.
And that's okay.
And it's okay. It's okay. Because
yes. Oh,
what we find, if we look at all the research and you actually look at how media companies start, they always start by doing one thing really well.
Yes.
They start with they're amazing at a podcast, or they've got an amazing YouTube channel, or it is an amazing email newsletter. That's how they all start. And then they diversify. Marketers are terrible. The marketers always diversify immediately. We don't want to do that.
Yeah. Amazon started selling books and they got really good at that.
3 years. 3 years, that's all they did was sell books. Remember that. Now they sell all the things, but you're not just going to go out and sell all the things. And Jay Klaus said this the other day. I love this example. He said, it is a lot easier to get an A+ in one course than go to 5 and get A's. Because you got to be an expert in all the things. Just do one and be great at it. And once you get that mastered, then you take another class.
Oh. So, Joe, I overdosed on practicality from this book, as I knew I would, but let's just give the listener one thing they could do today as soon as they finish listening to this, just to start to put in action one of the ideas from your book.
I mean, personally, I think that everyone personally should build their own audience because you can test things out, so you can practice on what you're doing, and then you can take it into your organization and do that. I think the content audit that we talked about is really important. What you'll find out is that in the organization, you're doing things you're not aware of. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So fix it. And it's an easy fix. You don't have to spend a lot of money to do it. Just talk to the other the people in your organization, and then back to, I'm giving you more than one thing, Douglas, but get that meeting
together. You're over-delivering.
If there's people in your organization that is charged of content in different sections, talk to them. Get regular meetings set up and figure out what your missions are and start aligning that mission, because you're not just going to start launching new things when you're already all over the place in your process throughout the organization. So just, you want to get everybody on the same page first, figure out what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, and then you can move forward with new projects after that.
Yes. And in that same chapter on the content audit, you have this the guideline where it says do these four things. Get all your stuff, all your marketing content, print, electronic, you know, make printouts if you have to. Put it on the conference room table, okay? That's the first thing. Then bring all the executives into the room. That's number two. Number three, ask them, is our content more about our customers' pain points or more about us and how great our products and services are? I think we know the answer to that. And the fourth one is ask them this. Will people share and spread this information on social media? Will they talk to their colleagues about it? Will they search for it? Will they become so engaged in it that they will friend or follow you? Will they care if we stop producing it? Oh, great advice. Great advice. Well, Joe, are there any recent or upcoming books that you've heard of that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Oh, well, I mean, I think you know more than I do, but I'm a big fan of Anne Hanley's Everybody Writes.
Yes.
She's got a second edition out, of course, as most people know. I would absolutely look at that one. I've recommended this on your show before, I think, but if you haven't read Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, it's a science fiction book. It has nothing to do with this, except for the fact that I learned the idea of focus through that book and the power of focus. And so anything that you can do in your organization to focus more on your customers' needs and less on all the things that you want to sell, and focus on what can I do with creating the minimal amount of content for the maximum amount of results. That's the kind of thing that I'm looking for. And then I'm a big fan of, right now, I learn a lot on the Prof G podcast as well. So Scott Galloway's podcast.
Oh yeah. Scott Galloway. Love it.
I'm a big fan of that. And I look at that as well. And I believe my good friend Robert Rose has a new book coming out soon on content marketing. So you're definitely going to want to pick that one up.
Yes,
as well.
I've heard about that.
I think you probably will interview him if I'm not mistaken.
If I play my cards right, I've introduced him to somebody who might be able to write a foreword to the book. And I hope that comes through.
The other one that I would say is, because I just love his work, I think Andy Crestedina is on something like his sixth edition of Content Chemistry.
Yes.
It's a really amazing book that he's been able to produce, and he updates it every couple of years. And I would highly recommend that one as well.
You know, Joe Polizzi, it's funny you mentioned that, because the other day when I was on Amazon, I was looking up your book. And you know how down below it says frequently bought together? Guess what was there? Amazon knows what they're doing. Three books, Epic Content Marketing, second edition, Everybody Writes, second edition, and Content Chemistry, volume 6. And I've had the honor of interviewing all three of you now. And those are three books that every marketer should have. And there's a few others, but those are three that I have never heard anybody feel that they did not get a great benefit from.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, but if you have those three books in your arsenal, you're pretty good. You're way beyond most marketers.
So. Yes, those three right there. And I, you know what? I'm going to include a picture of that screenshot just because I feel so strongly about all three books. Yeah. So you're on to something. Well, listen, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books you've mentioned, your site, Brian's site, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter account. Now your word to you, dear listener. I want to ask you a big favor. Please reach out in some way to Joe and congratulate him on this book. Thank him for being a guest. Tag him on social media. I mean, he's only coming back because he knows that there's a few people that are listening. So please do that. We've got to help Joe achieve this goal of beating out Mark Schaefer. And guests on the show have told me that they every week that they enjoy hearing from Marketing Book podcast listeners, not just because Marketing Book podcast listeners are, as we've discussed, Joe, so ridiculously good looking. And if you are listening on your smartphone and you subscribe to the Marketing Book podcast on your favorite podcast app like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on this episode's website link. The book is Epic Content Marketing Second Edition. Break through the clutter with a different story. Get the most out of your content and build a community in Web3. The authors are Joe Polizzi and Brian Piper. Joe, thank you very much for returning to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I look very forward to very soon being on another episode with another book.
Yes! And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."